Hi there, I'm Brian Griffin, and you're listening to The Lunch Hour, serving up food for the mind. Today's entree is politics. What's on your mind today? The governor's budget? Stem cell research? Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion. Okay, we have a question from Quahog. Caller, you're on The Lunch Hour. Can I take your order?
Yes, I'll have a big helping of the pretentious crap.
It's Britney, bitch.
And Iraq, everywhere like such as.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Out, Charlie! Out!
Our next door neighbors are foreign countries.
I call upon all nations to do everything they can to stop these terrorist killers.
Thank you.
Now watch this drive.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Remember Shuffle. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is my co-host, Giordano.
Holy crap, I'm on Remember Shuffle. Oh my god, this is freaking sweet.
Excellent. And today, we are joined by Ty, Andy, and Spencer of the Those Good Old Fashioned Values podcast.
Yo, what's good? Whose leg do you have to hump to get some Remember Shuffle?
If you're unfamiliar with their pod, it started out as a Family Guy pod. So we are doing a much requested topic in the comments, and we are going to be talking Family Guy, specifically the Family Guy that happened in the 2000s. So I actually want to open the floor up to our guests. For our listeners who might be unfamiliar, what made you want to do a podcast about this show in particular when you started your show?
Yeah, we ask ourselves that question a lot, especially in hindsight, since we don't really talk about Family Guy anymore, but started with me and Andy just watching the show on YouTube, just together on like Discord.
There are so many bots that just upload 10-hour compilations of Family Guy into YouTube. And once you click a couple of them,
there's like full-on streams.
You will never escape the Family Guy recommendations when it happens.
It's so great. You go on the streams, they're all cropped and edited and they jump around, and then you look at the comments and it's like 14-year-olds from Brazil asking if anyone wants to be their girlfriend.
We're going to title this episode of the pod Family Guy Most Racist Jokes Part 2 of 2,
parentheses,
no snowflakes allowed, something of that
are
nature.
Are we allowed to make racist jokes now?
Tyre's racism.
Why does someone know? I just need to know where the line's.
Well, sure. You'll find it.
Yeah, she will.
I'm kind of the bad boy.
Yeah, but after that, it was the pandemic and we had absolutely nothing going on. And I just asked Andy if he wanted to do a show on this, and he said, sure. And then Ty, who I met through Twitter, also was a Family Guy fan. I'm like, hey, do you want to be third mic on this? And to her eternal regret, she said yes.
Oh, it's ruined. Yeah, it's ruined everything.
We went through all the seasons, and then sometime in 2022, we were like, this is destroying everything about our minds. Like, we're watching a season of TV a week. We cannot keep doing this.
Yeah.
And so now we are.
It ruined a relationship I had with a woman who lived in Toronto. That's not a joke. That was legitimately one of the precipitating things that ended that relationship.
Oh, no. She was like, Family Guy occupies too much space in your brain?
No, I was like, Family Guy occupies too much space in my brain. Well, I was also, I was working like a shitty food service job, and I had nothing else going on. Between that and the podcast, I just had no free time. So I was just like, I just was stressed out all the time. I felt bad. And a big part of it was the show and the fucking stress of having to watch 12 hours of television twice a week.
Yeah. So we disembarked on that, and now we just do whatever we feel like.
I think I feel
really bad.
Yeah,
it's a variety show.
Because we've had, I think, one or two guests who have come on the show and did not do the prep, and they watched all of a full season of TV in one day.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how good TV that is. That is not something you should do. You should not watch over 20 episodes of one TV show in a day.
I wonder if you shouldn't watch television.
You should only listen to podcasts about TV shows.
Oh, no, this is worse.
I mean, honestly, I think it's probably less high impact on your brain than television is.
Yeah, that's actually a great segue to why we're doing a Family Guy episode in particular, because we get requests to do TV show episodes quite frequently. People want to hear us talk about the reactionary violence of 24 or the lost conspiracy theories or whatever. And we always say
now,
the same thing.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say, I'm sorry to interrupt. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this word, you can bleep it out. If your fans do sound like
We got the best fans in the world, all right? One guy did an EpiPen recreationally. Huge shout out to that guy.
That's the coolest guy. He's cooler than anyone who listens to our show.
Yeah, you should have had him on instead of us. That guy's way cooler.
Did he just not know where to get Adderall?
We had one guy say on our Tea Party episode that we did a better job of explaining why his dad is divorced than he does. Like, we got some just great guys listening to the show.
Yeah, I didn't say that, by the way. That was just Ty. Ty was the mean one.
That's kind of the dynamic, yeah.
But yeah, people request these TV episodes, and we tell them what you just said. Like, we don't have the time to watch all of this content. But Family Guy solves the problem, because...
Yeah.
It is every TV show.
Because all the jokes are standalone.
Yep, exactly. There's a lot of interchangeable parts. And we got three experts who have cooked their brain on Family Guy. And I think it also says a lot about the decade generally. Its cancellation and its resurrection that has to do a lot with technology. We've talked a lot about 80s nostalgia on our pod. And then I love your turn of phrase that you use on your show, the in-your-face lib persona of Seth MacFarlane.
Did we actually say that?
Yeah.
I think Andy said that.
Jesus Christ. That makes sense. Okay.
That feels like an Andy saying.
Hold on. Are we throwing me under the bus?
Yeah. There's a first time for everything, Andy.
Yeah.
It's a good turn of phrase. Why are we piling on Andy?
Because that's kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, that's half the episodes.
That's most of our content.
We're going to be quoting your show a lot today. And if Andy can maybe just be the sin eater and just take credit for all of the...
Yeah. Oh, that's fine. I don't remember saying anything to that.
But no, you are right. It's very Bill Maher. Mm-hmm. Seth MacFarlane's personal beliefs and the writing of the show it's a type of edgy lib that we don't really have anymore.
And also, I think something is that Seth definitely defined a lot of that early 2000s tone. Brian was obviously a self-insert for most of the early seasons. But a lot of it, the obnoxious lib tone that you'd see in like more recent clips and stuff, is from the fact that for several years now, I'm not exactly sure when the cutoff point was, probably sometime in the Trump era, not exactly sure when. Seth has been more distant from the show, only really doing voices.
It's been like 15 years.
Not really involved in the writer's room at all. And so a lot of that is also the crop of Family Guy writers inserting their own variation on a very similar kind of, I guess, in-your-face libbiness that Seth had.
Yeah. And also it's just like, it's a tough balancing act. We're a show that has gone on for, I mean, by this point, what, close to 25 years?
Yeah.
Obviously, it has an identity, but I feel like its identity is not as distinct as a lot of the shows that followed in its wake. You could argue American Dad has like a much more solid, concrete sense of what they're doing over there.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of the later stuff more fun to watch for them. Or stuff like Futurama, where even when it got like epic and kind of like Neil deGrasse Tyson-y, it's clear that like they had an idea of what the show looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with Family Guy, because it came in... So I don't want to say like white bread, but like it came in kind of as like a jack of all trades, able to do whatever the story required at whatever point that the writers were bringing it in, and aping that very like stereotypically banal family structure, sitcom structure. A lot of the later stuff has gotten a little bit more formless, especially with Seth and like the early writers kind of pulling off a bit.
If I can just signpost a little bit, I'm the robot of the show, so I'm often the one who's like trying to stay on track, much to Ben's chagrin all the time, but
good luck with
that. You're gonna have your work cut out for you this time.
I had being that guy of the show beaten out of me.
Yeah, no.
So we'll start with the history of the show, in case you've never heard of Family Guy. Then we'll move on to an appraisal of the show's value. And just talking about some of its high points and low points. The third item will be speaking about Seth MacFarlane as a person and his personal ideology. Next, we'll cover themes. We have three to talk about: postmodernism, media technology, and transgressiveness. And then finally, we'll end the show with the recap of how Family Guy changed over the decade, both in its characters and the format of the show.
Sounds good.
We'll start off with a little bit of Family Guy history. This will be sort of a Wikipedia style portion of the show. Family Guy is created by Seth MacFarlane, everybody knows this, in his dorm room at RISD in 1995. And by 1998, he's pitching it to Fox. And by 1999, it's premiering after the Super Bowl.
It is also worth pointing out that originally Seth, and then I think the TV pilots you can see on YouTube or whatever, there were very similar promos, like a pilot for something that with a not Peter and not Brian aired on Cartoon Network even before he did the Fox eel.
The Larry and...
his dog, yeah. Larry and Steve.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it runs for 3 seasons and it suffers through tough competition from competing time slots from reality TV and Friends and Frasier, and eventually it's canceled in 2002, but it's brought back after strong DVD sales and file sharing and just sort of cult popularity, which we'll talk about later in our media and technology section. And it re-premieres in 2005, and it's been a cultural force ever since. It's still on the air. It only recently got moved off of Sunday nights on March 6th. The 23rd season will be premiering on, I believe, Wednesday nights. It's a massive cultural force that spawned 2 spinoffs. So if we can give a quick appraisal of the show, I know that you guys tend to believe, it seems like, that season 6 is sort of the high watermark of the show. I believe, Ty, you called season 7 a masterpiece, even.
I normally say seasons, maybe like late season 4 to like late season 9, season 10 is usually the best area. But yeah, I think that era of like 6 through 8 is probably.
Post-cancellation, pre just everyone giving up.
Pre turning into sludge, yeah.
There is a point where you can see Simpsons, for example, they're the obvious zombie phase. Family Guy is the same thing. There is a point where it is like, oh, this is zombie show now. And for a lot of older people, that might be surprising.
Not a good zombie show like The Walking Dead. Yeah. But a bad one, like The Simpsons.
I feel like also that a lot of people, especially older than us, are like, yeah, seasons 2 and 3 are all right. But then once it comes back, it just immediately became zombie show. And I get that, but that's not how I feel.
Yeah, I think that when they get post-cancellation, because the thing is, when they got revived, apparently everyone in the industry was really mad about that because no other fucking show got that. This is before now when every single show that gets canceled gets a revival. Mm-hmm. People were pissed about that. And seemingly, they must have known this because immediately after that, they were just like, well, fuck you. We're doing whatever we feel like. Yeah, asshole.
And the show got a lot more distinct when Seth was in his whole, you know, someone told me I fell off, oh, I needed that era. I think that those early episodes were like, those first like 3-4 seasons were like fine. They had funny jokes within them. The performances were fine. Chappelle Lacey seems like a nice lady. But I think that once they came back and they were like, oh, we have a free pass to do whatever the fuck we want to do, the show gets measurably more interesting. It starts taking more interesting chances. The side characters start growing in prominence. They start getting more fleshed out. It becomes a more watchable show. It becomes, I mean, just a more interesting show after it comes back and they kind of let those shackles of having to be fighting for their life that they had in those first 3 seasons.
It's a lot less traditional, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Call me old-fashioned, but I like the first 3 seasons just because, one, I'll never truly be objective because I have this subjective attachment to like how I felt at 10 years old when I was watching these, but it had what I call the Peter trying to do, I'm trying to do right by my family. He was still the family guy trying to keep his family together. It was a traditional family TV show. It had those good old-fashioned values, if you will, a little bit more.
And then when they come back, Peter's like, well, geez, Lois, I'm going to steal a train. Like that's
Peter Jimmy Stewart?
Because I can do 2 voices. Well, geez, Lois, I sure hope that your dad doesn't come and beat the crap out of me.
I don't know, Lois, don't you understand? Your money's not with me.
There's someone, Lois, there's someone across the street. There's someone across the street killing his wife.
Well, geez, Lois, your dad's Jamiroquai.
Dancing. Walking, rearranging furniture.
But yeah, I think that once Peter, and I'm sure we had some gay term for it, like once Peter becomes like a force of nature or whatever, I do think once they take those fetters off, Peter becomes more a vehicle for jokes than a character in his own right. I think you can argue whether or not that's a better way to make a show, but I think that for that time when they were feeling very vital, their joke writing was stronger for those, you know, maybe 5 years post-revival. It was a much more watchable, much more digestible show. And frankly, like the rapid pace that they threw jokes out or whatever, like made it a lot more fun to watch than it was in those early seasons where they were like, well, geez, Meg, you're having a tough time at school.
It's able to finally like step out of the Simpsons shadow. Obviously, It's a show that constantly gets compared to The Simpsons, either favorably or unfavorably,
which I don't agree with. No.
It is an animated sitcom, but there's so many Fat Guy Hot Wives show.
Well, you know what's weird, though? I think the first couple seasons of The Simpsons and the first couple seasons of Family Guy are doing a more similar thing than the golden era of Simpsons versus the golden era.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
I think if you were just comparing the first three seasons of each, there is maybe a case to be made there.
Mm-hmm. I also just want to bring up that I think you guys have cited a high point of this series being the Brian and Stewie bottle episode, in which one of you cried. I can't remember which, but
it was probably me.
Yeah, it was you. Andy and I don't cry because we're strong.
Yeah, definitely. All
because of toxic masculinity, that's why.
Yeah.
So this episode is very funny because I think it is some of their best work, and they do it without any cutaway scenes. It's very sensitive. There's a lot of solid characterization and moving through emotions. And what's so funny about this episode is that it starts off with an extended sequence where Brian has to eat Stewie's shit. So it's even in this episode where they can have this beautiful emotional moment that they can put out to critics and say, hey, we can make a real TV show that tugs on your heartstrings, but you still have to sit through the dog eating the baby shit straight out of the diaper. You know?
I think going back to it as a full-grown woman, I probably would not say that was the best episode of Family Guy or as revelatory as I thought it was back then, because when we recorded that episode, I was a child.
Yeah.
And so were these two. And I think that going back now, I'd probably take an episode like, oh gosh, what's a great episode? Even that's like kind of plot.
The second James Woods crossover. The one with the identity thief.
The one where Peter becomes a cowboy or whatever.
Yeah.
Peter, you're going to enter the rodeo? That's stupid. You don't know anything about horses and you're in terrible shape.
You know, that's the difference between you and me, Lois. When life comes knocking at the door, you go and hide in the kitchen. I fling the door wide open and I say, Peter Griffin here, what do you got? And if that don't convince you, look at this. In this week's TV guide, it says Peter gets more than he bargained for when he joins the rodeo.
Well, it's in the guide. Hey, can we make that a thing? Can we start calling TV Guide the guide? You know what? I'm not even asking anymore. That's what we're doing.
I think I would take one of the purely funny, but the joke writing is on point episodes more than the poignant, I want to kill myself, Stewie episode.
Mm. I do want to talk about Brian and Stewie a little bit. Not necessarily the episode itself, but I think those two are good examples of also why I kind of prefer post-cancellation Family Guy to pre-cancellation. In that by season six, the show goes, okay, Brian is a little too much of a always right self-insert for Seth.
Yeah.
Let's make jokes about how he's a hack writer and like tear him down a little bit.
And then they go so far.
Yeah, they do go
that,
too
that,
far
like,
in the other direction, but I at least appreciate the attempt. And also just Stewie is funny as this weird gay one-year-old than a supervillain.
Yes.
Like he just
is.
Yeah,
the supervillain was never... I mean, it was cute for like a couple episodes in season one, but it really did not have nearly as many legs as Stewie as what if like a toddler was like a 39-year-old bohemian with a boyfriend in New York City.
That's a great character concept. Yeah. I also want to say you are right that they took the jokes with Brian a bit too far, but rewatching some episodes last night, the title of Brian's book, Faster Than the Speed of Love, fucking killed me.
That's great. Yeah. And they do strike a good balance for a couple seasons there where it's like, yeah, he is kind of pretentious and he is kind of in over his head and he is kind of like a snob and a smug asshole. But it so quickly tips over into like, oh, Brian's a liberal bitch. Brian sucks. Brian's a Bernie bro, dry dick.
Brian's
random.
A
and
loser,
like,
womanizer. Who
he's
can't
a freaking
keep a
reply guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like they turn Brian into a reply guy. I feel like within three or four seasons of that shift to a point where it's like, I wish you had just kept him as like,
dead.
Like I wish he, much in the same way where it's like, I wish Bill Maher was just doing the stuff he did in the early 2000s. But now I would rather Brian do the stuff he did in the early 2000s compared to what they're doing.
I love how when we have the straight man always write Seth insert Brian, we do get to get some humor of the occasional joke that I think they do sparingly enough to keep it funny of like the moments when he acts like an actual dog. Maybe I just have a bad sense of humor, but those always get me.
That
when
is
he,
true. The dog
the contrast
jokes,
between like him being the smartest man in the room and then him being like an animal who can't control himself. Yeah.
I just want to move us along because I don't want to run out of time. And so I'm going to move us along to the Seth MacFarlane.
Classic robot.
Yeah. Can someone tell this guy a paradox or something?
Sorry, before we move on, can I just add one more thing?
Please.
1-0-0-0-1-1-0-0-0-1-1-0-0.
That's sorry. Their word. You can't say that.
Oh, sorry. I meant 1200000.
Whoa. Okay. Like okay. I know you like to push boundaries. That's a little too far.
Yeah. Not with a hard 1001 at the end.
Yeah.
So Seth MacFarlane as a person, and we want to talk a little bit about his worldview, his ideology. So Seth MacFarlane, I think some of that atheist epic Reddit bro can come out a little bit in the 2000s. There's this episode in season 7 called All Dogs Go to Heaven, where Meg becomes a Christian and they're burning books. And so they're burning yeah. books that Christians hate. Books with titles mm-hmm. like Logic for First Graders.
Owned. You've been owned,
I know that's
dude.
True. Out of the park. I know that's true.
And some Dawkins books and stuff like that. But
yeah, Harry Potter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this earlier where the in-your-face lib like Bill Maher, if they're going to make fun of the war in Iraq or something, it's because the war is stupid, not because they're like, murdering thousands of people.
Not because the empire is bad. It's just like we got this dumb guy at the helm, this child like George Bush at the helm.
Hey, Lois, I'm good at finding people. I was the one who found Bush after Hurricane Katrina. Mr. President, are you up there? Go away! Sir, there's a disaster in New Orleans. I'm reading Super Fudge. You gotta come down and deal with this. Don't make me do stuff.
And I do think there is an argument to be made where it's like, that has definitely lost its luster. Like obviously, post-2016, everything that ostensible Hollywood libs are saying about like, oh man, he's like, you know, he's a dumb child with small hands. Like, obviously, it is not far enough. It's not meeting the moment. But there is something to be said for it's like, oh, there was a time where liberals fell open and honest enough to like be assholes about their beliefs. And at the very least, be like combative and like kind of punchy about the things they believe in, like moral choices that they want to make, instead of now where it's just like all whining about how people are voting uncommitted or whatever.
I also want to say, yeah. you have to remember the state of anti-Iraq war pop culture yeah. at that time was pretty bleak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Radiohead like, released a song brave. Called 2 + 2 = 5, and everyone was like, oh,
oh no.
Oh, he's done. Yeah. It's over.
Yeah. I like to imagine, like, from this if one. You were posting on Reddit about the flying spaghetti monster, you probably loved Family Guy, right? You probably loved these style jokes. But what I find so interesting about Seth MacFarlane is that, yes, he's this yeah. smug New England lib, has entire episodes where he's just like, I don't like the South. They're backwards and stupid mm-hmm. and whatever.
Speak on it.
But also, he loves big band music. He loves...
yeah.
He gets actually Frank Sinatra Jr. to come on the show, and I'm sure that was like a childhood dream cool. of his.
Well, Ben, he's a homosexual man.
It is. I think we have called him the gayest straight man.
He's not a straight man.
Okay, he's the straightest gay man, and the South Park guys are the gayest straight men.
Thank you.
Sus MacFarlane.
But I think that is nice. Also, because I think Ty pointed this out in one of the episodes, Seth has a deep love for a lot of media, and he shows it and stuff for like 40s, 50s, and 60s pop culture and like big pop popular guys. And so it's really funny how much on Family Guy, the animated comedy for like dumb frat bros or whatever, just making them listen to show tunes in those early seasons is a great contrast.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and that's the fun contrast is like it was kind of lowest common denominator for a bit there. Obviously, like making jokes about like, oh, it's a joke about Ghostbusters or like here's a joke about Caddyshack in the way that's like, yeah, the people who were in college at the time of it coming out would obviously find it funny. But then the way that Seth and like, the writers who I think probably shared some bugaboos and hangups with him managed to sneak their own little cultural fixations in there. That is genuinely interesting. Shit like that doesn't happen that much now. The idea of making this, you know, fratty, crude, rude, take no prisoners show, that's also very much informed by the weird fae mind of the guy who made it, who loves the Rat Pack.
Yep.
Yeah. Imagine if there was a big band number in the middle of one of the Frat Pack movies from the time. Like if Old School had a big band number in the middle of it. You can't. It's only through the beautiful mind of Seth MacFarlane that we get that.
Even now, imagine if Abbott Elementary was very influenced by like neo-noir or something. That doesn't happen. Like everything is like, not, I'm not saying everything is slot, but like it feels like so much stuff is meant to fit a mold so much that going back and looking at, oh, even this kind of what you could read as disposable with this backlit, like retroactive view of it, is still drawing from very weird esoteric influences, or at least esoteric compared to like what you think a show like it would be drawing from, is genuinely kind of unique and a marker of the time. Same thing with South Park.
Esoteric. Could it mean sexy?
I think it's a science term.
Fellas, esoteric means delicious.
Lois, who's the boss is not a food.
I also wanted to add that one of the things that got me kind of fascinated with the show is my friends and I found this guy on YouTube. He had to delete all of his videos because he got too much attention. But it was this just random hick from Ohio who he would just play scenes from a Family Guy episode and then just sit in his car talking about how incredible they were. And there's like, he saw like, there was a show tune scene. He was like, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't know where in Seth's mind, like, how does he even think of this stuff?
It's yeah,
like,
It is the...
And then we were like, say, that's a good idea for content.
It's just the idea of all these fentanyl addicts in Ohio. They have to watch this show that has lib politics, has show tunes in it, has references to Cary Grant movies. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, they all love it, but it feels like you're taking a dog to the modern art museum. It's like, they're not getting any of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to move on, Ben and I have like a little bit here about Seth MacFarlane, because he famously has a 9/11 close call, much like Mark Wahlberg. He's too hungover to get on his plane to LA, and his travel agent gives him the wrong boarding time. He's 10 minutes late, and he doesn't get on one of the 9/11 planes. But unlike Mark Wahlberg, he never wondered.
He couldn't have taken down the terrorists.
Yeah, we've wondered on our show, what would it be like if Seth MacFarlane was like, would it have gone down like that? Or would he have?
Ah, geez, Lois, this is crazier than the time I took down the 9/11 terrorists. Yeah.
I don't know, Peter, if I was on that plane, it wouldn't have gone down like that.
Whose leg do you have to hump to get a box cut around here?
Yeah, I imagine like a preachy lib Brian thing going, fellas, don't you understand? Islam's not real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brian would definitely have taken them down with the power of the flying spaghetti monster.
Yes.
Yeah. He would have converted them to Pastafarians.
I think that literally happened in one of the families.
Oh, God. Seth MacFarlane should himself.
I was thinking if it was Peter on the plane, we would have got a musical number for sure. Like, they're the fellas at the freaking Taliban. I know the Taliban didn't do it, but it goes into the song better than Al-Qaeda.
No, it's Al-Qaeda didn't fit. Yeah, you were right to make that historical revision.
Okay, so we can move on to our theme section here. The first one we have is on postmodernism. And so I'll open this up by first saying, you know what really grinds my gears? How often the definition of postmodernism seems to change based on what you're talking about. So in literature, postmodernism means meta-theatricality and self-referentiality. But in architecture, it's defined by a rejection of austere modernity. What I mean by postmodernism in the context of Family Guy is that Family Guy, in many ways, is only funny or made funnier because of a prior contact with a culture, right? It references existing media. It plays with the existing format of jokes. And so for Family Guy to work, you have to be familiar with an expectation of what a TV show should look like or what a joke should look like. That way you can appreciate the way that Family Guy undermines that or appreciate the reference within the reference that they might be making. So we did want to talk about how important postmodernism is to Family Guy.
I think one of the things that Family Guy kind of struck gold on is that when you look at to an extent, the pre-cancellation seasons as well, but from like 2004, 2009, most of the big things that it's obviously referencing are the things that we have been doing franchise and pop culture stuff for 50 years now. Like most of the big iconic horror and sci-fi and action movies that Seth is referencing and pulling jokes from have been in the mainstream for 50 years. So Family Guy benefits from this kind of rot in nostalgia culture where everything is just the same well for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to go the same way. And I think that that's a good point. With this show as referential and a creator as steeped in pop culture and media as Seth, I think that if you are going to feel in any way vital or interesting, you are by necessity going to have to include those aspects of postmodernism, because what else is there to say about like the tropes and the well-worn ideas and the well-worn themes, the plot structures that you're playing with, other than finding ways to break them and question them and kind of subvert them, especially if you're doing comedy. Comedy is all about the subversion of audience expectation, which is fucking trite to say, but like it is true. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there is not a way to make a show like Family Guy guy with a creator like Seth MacFarlane and the, you know, a writer's room of like-minded individuals without kind of dipping into like, oh yeah, well, it's not going to be funny if we just do I Love Lucy again. So like, what is a tack we can take on this? Especially if most of the comedy is coming from just being like, hey, remember that thing from the 80s? You're going to have to find a way to break that structure of traditional sitcom plotting in order to just literally make a show watchable with that kind of melange of influences that they bring into it.
Yeah. And one of the ways they subvert those expectations is by playing with the format of their own show, like setting up a bait and switch where it's like, this is worse than the time, and then not having the clip and commenting on it.
They'll come after you like Peter went after that hockey coach. Oop, no clip. Nope, thought we had a clip. Nope, okay.
Or most famously playing entire music videos during their
show. Yeah, the Conway Twitty stuff.
Or the,
yeah.
Or the Mick Jagger one.
Oh, yeah, God,
which is
yeah.
Like, partially, you could argue postmodern. Partially, it's also just funny joke writing.
Yeah, I mean,
like it's, if you know this, if you know your show is built around cutaways, going to a cutaway and it not being there, or like doing a cutaway that isn't funny at all, like that's just basic like joke structure.
Mm-hmm. A lot of comedy is built on just subverting expectation. And when you are a show that is now currently in 20-year-long run, those are some pretty well-set expectations people have for your show. So it makes sense that the subversions eventually just start getting subverted.
Yeah,
because things are so familiar.
The arc of any show, especially a sitcom that's on long enough, is becoming about itself. And yeah. Family Guy got there very, very fast.
Very quick.
Yeah. And listen, this is the goal that they struck, but it's also, it's very powerful magics that they're dealing with. This is something you've said on your show a lot. A reference is not a joke. Sometimes it's just a reference. This is where I think some people's frustrations with Family Guy can shine through.
Yeah. And at its worst, it is just being like, remember Caddyshack? But especially in those years that we're referring to, and like the pre-cancellation also, I think, even if the jokes are not particularly funny or if they feel dated, they do often try to build a joke out of it. I think they're better at it from like season 4 to season 10. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the references, I think, people unfairly malign because either they saw those really early episodes or like the later ones, both of which where they either don't have their footing just because they haven't found it yet or they lost it. And they're like, oh, they just think it's funny to like bring up something that happened before, where it's like, no, oftentimes they're making a joke, even if it is kind of the first thing you would think of with that reference. They are making a joke out of it. But yeah, we are very clear that when they do not make a joke out of it, it's not a joke.
And also, a lot of times, the reference, once you get far enough into Family Guy, the reference is not to a different thing. It is to Family Guy's top. Like, how many callbacks have they had to Peter's skinned knee?
Mm-hmm.
Chicken fights?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The Peter copter.
Yeah. No.
The Peter copter gets me.
Meg being a bitch. Like,
yeah. She is, yeah. Man.
And Peter skinning his knee,
sucks.
That's a subversion originally, right? That's an early season subversion where it's like, oh, I expect this joke to go on for this long, and now it's going on for even longer. So they're subverting my expectations that way. And then by going back to it, they're making it even more self-referential and weird. This happened a lot. If you look at those early seasons, a postmodern joke might be like the angel having his own angel on his shoulder.
Oh, geez, how the hell am I going to break this to Lois? If she finds out I got fired for drinking, she's going to blame me. Lie to her. It's okay to lie to women. They're not people like us. I don't know. Hey, where's the other guy? Come on, you bastard, I'm late for work. Oh, this is perfect. Hey, yeah, sorry, man, am I late? What'd I miss?
Oh, thank God you're here. What do I do?
Tell him to keep lying. He's in too deep.
I don't know. Hey, where's the other guy?
Ah, this is unbelievable.
Whereas by the time you get to like season 6 or 7, the postmodern joke is like them acknowledging that Lois's B plot just hasn't finished. And they're like, oh, well,
yeah.
Like, screw it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just glad everything's back to normal. I don't think I was cut out to be a TV reporter.
Yeah, how did you lose your job there anyway?
Oh, I don't know. Do you really care, Peter? I mean, does anyone really care?
Yeah, you're right. The story's over. Everything will be back to normal next week. So, yeah, who gives a damn? Anybody got any more jokes? Stewie? Anything funny? No. Brian? Meg? Chris? Nope. All right. See you, folks.
And so I do want to move us along. I might move on to media technology. So I think Family Guy is one of the best examples you can give of a show that has been impacted by media technology. The way that we consume it has shifted so much over the last 25 years, and it's been really indicative of the economics of making a TV show. And so originally it's on Fox, one of the original broadcast networks, and it fails. And it's brought back because of three different things that are very indicative of the times. First being syndication on Adult Swim, which we'll be covering in our next episode. And at the time, the idea that it got to be on this esoteric channel meant that it could succeed better. And now that we have a very bifurcated media market, that's like all we have now. But at the time, Family Guy needed to be on a genre-specific channel to succeed, as well as strong DVD sales, and how Ben and I actually originally came across it, which was through file sharing. Ben had a Gen X cousin who introduced us to this show via like LimeWire or something.
Yeah, you know,
like,
giving your parents home PC every virus in the world so that you can watch the Pitoria episode.
Yes.
Yeah, it's what we
just
had
like
that,
Fidel Castro wanted.
Yeah. What we had to do was go on to places called like 123movieslegal.com where they had every Family Guy episode uploaded.
I mean, I was lucky. We just had TBS and they played that sumbitch all the time. So, I mean, you guys are old as hell. I don't...
Oh.
We are like, we're the perfect non-having to watch Family Guy on the internet generation, I feel like, me and Spencer and Andy, because I feel like it jumped from file sharing and then us where it's like, yeah, just on like Adult Swim and fucking TBS and Comedy Central shit. And then it went to watching it with Subway Surfers underneath.
You had to dust off your dad's 35 millimeter prints of Family Guy season 3.
Or the best way to watch TV shows on the internet for a period, watching a Family Guy episode as 3 7.5 minute long clips on YouTube.
Yes.
And sometimes you can't find the second part of the episode.
Yeah. You're just like, well, I guess. See, I don't know though, because for me, Family Guy was never the show to do that with. Family Guy was like popcorn. Like, it was like, if it's around, you're like, yeah, I'll eat it. Mm-hmm. Like, Naruto, I definitely did that with. But like,
that's the next section of this media portion of the show. We're going past the 2000s, like into the 2010s, where Family Guy is now being consumed on YouTube and TikTok, a medium that it seems almost perfectly tailored for, because it can be enjoyed like popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch the Family Guy most offensive joke compilation, open bracket, not for snowflakes, close bracket, and enjoy it as much as an episode.
That's how I got back into it. You know, in my later teen years, my friends and I were bored, so we just went on the TV and looked up Family Guy, like, you know, Family Guy racist moment compilations or whatever, Family Guy most offensive jokes. And watching it last night, I had it on in the background while I was just doing some like busy work, and it was perfect like that. You just pay attention, you get a good joke, you go back to what you're doing, don't pay any attention to what's happening in the story. It hit the fucking spot like that.
And I think you could argue that Family Guy would not have had that mimetic viral reach it had. Like, obviously it had an audience after, even after those first three seasons, but I feel like it would not have the footprint it has now if it did not make that shift from being very story oriented to being like, yeah, it's just like joke. Most of them are separate. You can just kind of zone out and zone back in.
Yeah, 100%. And nobody's posting clips like that of The Simpsons. No one's doing that of South Park.
Well, also because Family Guy still had some funny jokes by the time that like that came around.
Yeah.
And even The Simpsons, people didn't see The Simpsons as much because for a while The Simpsons was impossible to see if you didn't have DVDs. But I think also, even when The Simpsons still has good jokes, like I've seen some really late season Simpsons episodes and they have a few good jokes, but like they don't make any fucking sense clipped out of context. Whereas with Family Guy, just throw them all together and just works perfectly. No.
When modern Simpsons episodes end up on YouTube, they're like weird edits of full episodes uploaded in clearly text from China, from like first language Chinese, and it's like a title that makes no fucking sense. You can't do the here's a bunch of individual clips nearly as well. And honestly, you couldn't do that for American Dad as well.
No, I mean, it is the thing that the South Park guys made fun of Family Guy for in that episode with the fucking manatees that go on a writer's strike about about drawing the Prophet Muhammad or whatever.
Yeah, just pushing the balls in the place.
They charge Family Guy with being an interchangeable series of jokes told through cutaway and flashback. And like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but they certainly...
if it is, that's not a fucking like issue.
Maybe it is. Maybe if it is, Matt and Trey, it doesn't give you the right to make a fucking anti-writer strike episode.
Yeah. Well, also like, even if that is what's going on with Family Guy, it's like, that's the reason that it has the kind of reach that it has now in the internet age, instead of like just for guys who make 35-minute long videos about like Kathleen Kennedy sucks dick. Like,
right, yeah.
Also, by that point, by the time the Cartoon Wars episode aired in both Family Guy and South Park, we were clearly in these girls are having a mid-off territory by that
yeah,
point.
100%.
Nice. But yeah, the thing that they took Vlad for is its strengths now.
Yeah.
I mean, not really, because it's not like...
I mean, maybe not like... yeah, not strength in terms of quality.
Oh, I was going to say not really their strength, considering it's not like they're making any money off of that.
Also, yeah, also that. Hey, listen. Yeah. Napoleon said that quantity has a quality of its own, and that is the Family Guy mentality.
Brand recognition ain't a bad thing.
It is their mentality with the jokes, too, I find. That a lot of jokes aren't great, but with Family Guy, you like you know there's another one coming in less than 15 seconds.
Yeah, and that one will probably be bad, too. But maybe, like, maybe there'll be a couple good ones in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that is the thing. When they do have an actually good one, you do, are you like, God damn it, you do feel a little bad at yourself for laughing.
They got me.
I was watching one this morning, and I wasn't laughing a ton. It was the Pretoria episode, and the one stupid fucking joke that got me, that is the exact feeling of, like, disappointment in myself for having been got by this joke. But Brian says to Peter, you know, hey, Peter, I've stuck with you through worse, and they have the Ferris wheel, and as the Ferris wheel comes up, Peter is just on fire screaming on the Ferris wheel, and I'm like, fuck, man, you got me. You got me, Seth.
Yep.
Well, Brian, at least you're loyal enough to stay with me.
I've stuck by you through worse.
My friends and I, we would throw in these compilations, and they'd be kind of an endurance test in the same way we would watch, like, bad movies on purpose. We watched, like, Maximum Ride for some reason, and it was the same principle.
Fuck you.
Yeah, but I remember we were just sitting there in stone-cold silence, and then the Fingernails for Cash bit came on, and when it came on, we all fucking died laughing.
I think I remember you saying, like, back when we started, that specific moment was the inspiration for the show.
Yeah, no, that when that came on, I was like, oh my god, this is really good. I was mad about that since it completely got me out of nowhere.
Everyone has fingernails and everyone wants cash. So send us all your fingernails and we'll send you some cash. Fingernailsforcash.com, fingernails for cash. Remember, it's just fingernails, so don't expect much cash. Fingernailsforcash.com, our service never fails. Just take the cash and don't ask why. We want your fingernails, cause we might be building a fort with them.
Fingernailsforcash.com. You get the cash, we get to build a fort with your fingernails.
Even before the podcast, we were like doing shit with, because I think we met, our friend introduced us. She knew we both like Family Guy.
Yeah.
Or like ironically liked it, quote unquote.
Yeah. Because anyone's enjoyment of the show is like that bit with the Barry Manilow bit from season 6.
It had like two good jokes.
Yeah.
maybe like three or four, maybe like a couple of episodes.
Right, exactly.
I fucking love Family Guy.
I love Family Guy.
Get ready, Quahog, because Barry Manilow will be performing this weekend at the Quahog Performing Arts Center.
Barry Manilow.
What a joke.
So stupid.
And boring as hell.
Yeah, no kidding.
You couldn't pay me to go to that thing.
Hey, you know what we should do? We should go just as a goof.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, just look at all the idiots.
All the dumbass Manilow fans.
Yeah. I mean, he's got like one good song.
Yeah, I mean, Mandy is not terrible.
Yeah, the opening's okay.
And I guess you can't hate Copacabana.
Yeah, if you're in the right mood.
Daybreak is a good song.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good song. And I like Weekend in New England.
Yeah, it's a good one. Looks like we made it.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Right?
I love Barry Manilow.
Oh, my God, he's the best!
I have everything he's ever recorded!
Me too!
Okay, so I'm going to move us on to transgressiveness, because it seems like a huge part of Family Guy is that the reaction that they are trying to elicit often is not laughter, but actually a gasp. They want you to say, like, oh, Jesus, I can't believe they just said that.
Yeah, well, especially because in early episodes, or not early, I guess, like partway through the run, they did make Quagmire's dad a transgressive, and they were not.
I was waiting for that.
Well done.
Thank you.
You got me.
Yeah. And moms groups would write in. And it seems like that's actually part of the fun for either the people that enjoy Family Guy or were writing it, was the idea that someone would react negatively to this.
Yeah, it's edginess for the sake of edginess, right?
Yeah, which was a big deal in the 2000s,
yeah.
I feel like. Yeah. I don't know, I was seven, but...
And they would just take these random digs at celebrities, just it seemingly out of nowhere, you know, to make fun of.
They would also later then have on the show, or have had on the show before, but maybe they didn't agree to come back, so fuck you.
And I think you can see in that, maybe I'm just fucking, like, maybe I'm bullshitting, but I feel like you can see in that, like, as much as they decry it, a lot of, like, the reality TV influence of the time on Family Guy's way of trying to retain audience or catch audiences. Like, it feels like a lot of stuff in the 2000s saw reality TV just being like, oh, it's about a reaction, no matter, like, even if it's like people being like, this is crass, like, this is tasteless, so long as they are talking about it, they will come back to it as kind of like a precursor to the internet age, where now reaction is literally the only thing anybody responds to ever. And I feel like Family Guy caught on that wave better than most because of that kind of alienated individual joke structure that it had, where it could afford to just say something kind of risky and transgressive and then move on to the next thing very fast in a way that a more plot-oriented show couldn't.
100%. Yeah. And yeah, when the moms complain, that's what they want, right? There's a Wikipedia article that I found that is just called Family Guy Controversies. And it's a list of people who have complained about the show, who filed complaints with the FCC. But some of the highlights that I found, there's some Russian politician, Yana Landratova, who complained about the season 21 finale of Family Guy portraying her city of Chelyabinsk as being contaminated by radiation and its local citizens as drunkards and drug users dissatisfied with life.
By that point, if you're complaining about Family Guy season 21, you should probably just consider, like, throwing your TV out there.
Yeah, like,
like, you don't know how to use that shit.
Are you mad at Dennis the Menace too? Like,
yeah. It'd be like staring at your wall and being like, that wall's insulting me. Like, you don't... You're not right.
Yeah.
You're incorrect.
Another great one. Family Guy, they make jokes about rape, and this is not something that they shelved after those first couple seasons. They had a rape joke in their crossover episode with The Simpsons.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And a spokeswoman from the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network commented on this.
She shouldn't be doing that. They got a whole network for that? I mean, if it's just me, and I, you know, obviously you're getting through, I do not think they should have an organization for doing that. That seems... I don't want it to be decentralized either, but if an organization feels like way too...
But here's the deal. She was defending Family Guy. She said, I think the show is making it clear that rape is not funny by how they are positioning the joke. So it's like a kind of Mel Gibson defense. Like, listen, I got this person from the rape organization who says it's okay for me to joke about this.
Yeah.
I just want to say that Simpsons crossover episode is bad for about 50 other reasons than that joke. It's one of the worst episodes of TV I've ever seen.
Also talking about controversy in The Simpsons, how they responded to The Simpsons making a joke about Seth being a plagiarist. The fucking Quagmire raping Marge Simpson joke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That one is always as like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I'm glad that woman found something of value in that joke. She should go back and watch the rest of the show where Quagmire rapes approximately 45.
It's so funny how they've had to completely, in the past 7 or 8 years, just remove all of, like, you know, maybe we got to keep Quagmire in the show, but maybe we shouldn't, like, make him
maybe
like a rapist.
He's just a persnickety old man now.
Which is a lot funnier for the
record. That's all they do with it.
That's a much, much better character. But yeah, no, it is funny to see, as time has marched on, they've had to peel back more offensive positive things about their show.
Like Herbert's gone.
Herbert's gone?
I think so. Yeah, I think they've stopped using Herbert.
Oh, man. Yeah. Damn.
And I think that can be a good example for how The Simpsons and Family Guy are very different. Because, for example, on The Simpsons, a character might be like, oh, he's a sea captain. And on Family Guy, you can imagine Seth in the writer's room being like, what if there's like a gay pedophile? You know? And in that Simpsons crossover episode, you get Bart doing the crank call to Moe's, and Bart's doing a classic Simpsons sensibility joke, like,
Moe's Tavern, Moe speaking.
I'm looking for a friend. Last name Keebum, first name Lee.
Yeah, hang on, I'll check. Hey, guys, do I got a Lee Keebum? Come on, look at the stools. Is there a Lee Keebum? Somebody check the rear. I know I got a Lee Keebum.
Then you probably shouldn't be handling food.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. That's the coolest thing ever. Hey, I want to try.
Okay.
Moe's Tavern.
Hello, Moe. Your sister's being raped. Is that one?
The two sensibilities of the show, I think, are pretty much on display. You can see that they don't have a lot in common in tone.
And also, crucially, that at that point in time, neither was funny.
Yeah, that is true.
Yes.
Something that I like talking about controversies that I want to bring up is I want to talk a little bit about Brian's death. Because not because it's like, regardless of how the episode did or how lame it was that they brought him back three episodes later, I feel like if you are a TV show or a long-running piece of media and you do such an obvious desperate stunt for views, it's over. Come on, just pull the plug. Yeah. Like, once you hit that point, it's like, all right, goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah, that 100%. Was so funny because the reactions at the time, they're preserved in amber across the internet, and they're some of the best fucking things you will ever read. Just, it went through college fucking dorms like Fent. Like, it was a disaster for so many people. They're like, it's not going to be the same show anymore, man. How's it going
to
do this?
You have to imagine that there were at least five suicides.
I don't think anyone, I don't think they would be like smart to pull it off, but there'd be five attempts where they turn the oven on and try to do the Sylvia Plath thing.
I mean, most of them, are like someone trying to hang themselves in their kitchen and they mess up and the noose breaks, but then they fall headfirst in a bucket and like suffocate.
Yeah.
But you got to imagine at least a couple people ended their lives over that.
Yeah.
Like just someone who's like, Brian's the only fucking thing I have of my life, you know, just like,
yeah, it's like when John Lennon
does the witty jokes and he humps the chair.
I got one last controversy I want to read. I'm just going to read this paragraph verbatim from the Wikipedia. The episode Turban Cowboy aired on March 17th, 2013, contained a cutaway gag showing Peter committing mass murder at the Boston Marathon by plowing his car through the runners.
Holy crap, this is awesome! I haven't felt a rush like this since I won that marathon.
I'm Bob Costas, here with Boston Marathon winner Peter Griffin. Peter, how did you do it?
I'll tell you, Bob, I just got in my car and drove it. And when there was a guy in my way, I killed him.
After the bombing at the 2013 Boston Marathon, which occurred about a month after the episode's air date, April 15th, Fox promptly removed the Turban Cowboy episode from Fox.com and Hulu.
That was a great joke. They shouldn't have cut it.
What the fuck?
This has really gone too
far. What the
hell? They didn't even
know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be punished for the crimes of those two handsome young men. Like, they didn't even know that the Boston Marathon was going to get bombed. It was just a good-ass joke.
In terms of like Family Guy episodes that I had a problem with, one of the ones that I want to point out is the Peter Becomes Muslim episode, because that one's just like, oh, hey, yeah. No, it is just like that one is actually kind of fucking racist. Like, genuine.
Well, like a lot of liberals, they have a blind spot when it comes to the entire Middle East.
I also want to say for the Boston Marathon joke, I wonder if Zokar's FBI handlers were watching that episode and it's like, oh, I got an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, people love to say Simpsons predicted it, but nobody's talking about this Family Guy lathe of heaven moment manifesting this thing. And also, the final sentence of that paragraph, Fox pulls it, and within 1 year, they were airing it again. So
yeah, good. It's funny. I mean, the rest of that episode is not what it, but like, honestly, if anything, it makes that joke less funny that the Boston Marathon hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. It's like in the identity theft episode with James Woods, Peter's talking about making the window buddy. He's doing the movie about being the window washer on 9/11 right before the plane comes through. And the title of the movie, what was it? Two Pies Thrown and One in a Field in Pennsylvania. That really always gotten to me.
I think I always assumed that the Boston Marathon joke happened in the wake of that. And I felt like one of the old guys, on like one of Tony's friends on The Sopranos, like a capo, like the cojones on these guys. But like knowing it was just an accident, I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah, it's, I mean, it's still a good joke, but it's like it loses something.
Okay, I'm going to move us along to our final section of the show, which is change. The way that Family Guy changed throughout the 2000s.
It got bad.
Yeah, well, it got bad, but...
Well, first it got better, and then it got worse.
Yeah.
It took a while, I think, for the staff to figure out who these characters were and how they could be real characters. And I'm going to steal another line from your podcast at one point, because for Stewie, you say that in the beginning, he's initially more of a concept than a character. And he morphs from being this evil genius obsessed with killing Lois to this sort of like queeny gay baby, and ultimately becomes a much better character. And they do acknowledge this in some episodes. They, you know, straight up asking Stewie if he's gay.
For my money, I don't think any of those happened without the Road to
Yes, true.
Episodes. Because I think they would have been fine to keep Stewie as the kind of one note, you know, oh, he's a supervillain, he's got a ray gun characterization, had there not been that surprising rapport between him and Brian in those episodes. And I think then they're like, oh no, there's actually more jokes we can make with this guy. There actually is a character under there we found. And yeah, and I think also just, oh yeah, he's kind of queening and Faye, because that's a good takeoff from supervillain. And then that obviously leads to the question where it's like, we make a lot of jokes like dancing around it, is this guy actually gay? And yeah, they're right for not giving a definitive answer for that, because ultimately, like, that's not the kind of show they're making. A kind that needs to have that specific reality placed on it.
You are safe with me. I will cradle you in my arms through any crisis in any galaxy.
Are you queer?
Probably.
And it's the other half of Seth MacFarlane, you know, the queeny gay guy, not the evil genius.
Well, it's 75% of it.
Joe has a similar character track to Brian, where like at first Joe is very cool, and eventually, you know, Joe transitions to being this very pathetic butt of the joke character who kind of makes everybody feel sad. And then the characters' relationships to each other changes a lot too. So, you know, initially the show is built around that Larry and Steve model, the man and his dog who are best friends and go on adventures together. It's about Brian and Peter together as best friends. And what we'll find as the show goes on is that the relationships that we stick with are actually Brian and Stewie versus, you know, Peter and the guys. And that I also just wanted to say one more strength of Family Guy I find is that it does a really good job of parodying like how people speak to each other, like social dynamics that they're commenting on, almost like Seinfeld things where you're noticing like how people talk and making fun of that.
That is fantastic. Terrific work. So no weaknesses at all, huh?
No.
You hesitated there. Is it something I should know?
No, it's virtually indestructible, like 99.99%.
Okay, wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask what's the 0.01.
I would say despite being more popular than a lot of the other animated shows that aired alongside it, I would say in terms of legacy of more adult-oriented early 2000s animation, a lot of people are pulling a lot more from, say, the dog episode of Futurama than most of what Family Guy.
Yeah, there is more structure. There is more, I think, staying power to what shows like that are doing because they're making a show and not a series of gags.
I do think Family Guy, though, did have an obvious, clear influence on the rest of the industry in terms of, like, it kind of was, even more than Simpsons, the default art style of TV animation for a while there, of newer and less good shows, is that they have the same kind of bland, but also bright color palette, the very simple, rounded character designs. It's a lot of that, yeah. That same look.
Stiff movement and, like more... Oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm trying to get on some Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud shit. But like, you know what I mean? Like movements that are more easily readable rather than like in The Simpsons where a lot of gags are like, they're making a sight gag. It's like very detail heavy, or at the very least, it's very specific on the details. I think that Family Guy really brought in, like pioneered, not that it is not specific on details, but like a kind of loosening of visual language to something that is more kind of like, so long as we translate what we're trying to show, that's good enough.
I think someone who is incredibly influenced by Family Guy, even if he wouldn't necessarily admit it, would be someone like Dan Harmon, both with Community, where Community does the fake clip show episode where we have live action cutaways of things that have never happened again, which is one of my favorite episodes of Community. And then, of course, Rick and Morty, right? The idea that like opening up this space for taking some pretty big creative risks for what you can do in an adult animation. Like, I think we probably don't get Dan Harmon in his current form without Seth MacFarlane and Family
Guy. I would say a lot of the more serious stuff that Rick and Morty tries to do, a lot of their more dramatic moments feel very influenced by Brian and Stewie as an episode.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about Brian next, because he also makes this transition from being basically just Seth MacFarlane, the cool guy. Hey, it's me, it's Brian. And he transitions to this sort of pathetic alcoholic. And you guys point out on your podcast that there's actually like a lot of jokes in those early seasons where Stewie and Brian's roles are flipped because they haven't quite figured out the dynamic yet. There's that example where Stewie steals a joke from The Onion.
I can't believe they're brainwashing kids like Chris to serve in the military.
Ah, yes, the bottom 10% of our high school class is off to fight another battle.
You stole that from The Onion.
What?
You stole that. I read that in The Onion about the war in Iraq.
Well, if that's true, then I'd say they've got some sharp cookies over at the, what is it again? The Onion?
So if I go up to your room right now, I'm not going to find a copy of The Onion, right?
No.
Damn it! That's what I thought.
If that same joke was made later in the series, it would have to be the other way around. Stewie ripping on Brian, because Brian becomes increasingly pathetic and sad. That Brian and Stewie episode is a great example, because at that point, Brian is near suicidal.
Well, I think it's just like, not to talk shit, I think the writing on the show, as it does with a lot of shows, got lazier. They saw like a lazy characterization that they could go for. They escalated because it's a comedy show, and then it just got out of their hands. And they got to a point where Brian's only characterization is that he's the worst guy in the world.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't really think there's anything to say other than like, I wish that they had kept good writers, and I wish that the show had not grown stale enough that they felt like that's something they had to do.
I wish they could have also just, and I understand this because apparently working on Family Guy is a pretty easy job with benefits and all that, but I kind of wish the show got canceled like 10, 15 years ago. Well, maybe not 15, but like 10 years ago.
Honestly, we're at the point where it's like American Dad should have been canceled like 5 years ago, and that's like a significantly better show even now.
Yeah, it's a longer run. Like, there are definitely more good seasons of American Dad than Family Guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I want to be very clear about this. It's very cool that you guys brought us on this show. We've been trying to do a collab for a while. I personally have not watched Family Guy in probably the better part of a year.
I've seen bits and pieces on YouTube still because, you know, that's just what happens. Yeah. But I have not sat down and watched a full episode in a while either.
I watched some last night, like I said.
Loser. Nice.
Well, listen, I saw something online somewhere recently about Christopher Nolan and the stupid Batman line, right?
Yeah.
You die hero or you live long enough to see yourself become a villain.
Yo, that's wise as fuck.
Well, yeah. Christopher Nolan apparently didn't want to put that line in the movie. His brother wrote it. And Christopher Nolan had two questions. Number one, is this true? And number two, what does this even mean? His brother is like, no, you got to keep it in the movie.
Christopher Nolan was like, can we replace that dream with Batman saying like, I'd like to fuck an idea. What if nightmares were real?
This is what's happened to these zombified shows. They have not died a hero. They've lived long enough to see themselves become the villain. It's deep as fuck.
That's wise. Yeah.
I love how Christopher Nolan's secret sauce is that he just has a really stupid brother.
Yeah. Honestly, it's kind of Cohen-esque.
Yeah, no, they have...
If you think about
it. They have the guy who, like, reads philosophy, and then they have the one dude who's like, what if Batman was real?
What if dream had thoughts?
What if your time moved backwards, but you were going forwards?
Dog, what if, like, what if World War I sucked?
What if you couldn't remember your name, but you remembered how to kill?
Fuck.
I think we've naturally sort of transitioned to our concluding remarks on the show, which is the state of Family Guy today and its successor shows and its spirit, because its spirit has changed quite a bit now. And I believe you've said that it feels more like the Griffins being cynical to the world instead of the world being cynical to the Griffins.
I would argue it's less the Griffins being cynical towards the world and more a bunch of 28-year-old writers being like, hey, I saw a tweet that could be funny to put in this. But when we were trying to to squeeze the juice out of it back when we were like 21 or whatever, we might have like said some stuff about it. I genuinely do not think it goes any farther than a bunch of people who are like, in a couple years, I'll get to write for Conan, being like, let's just fucking get through this episode. Let's do an episode about Infinite Jest.
But I would like to say, talking about Seth's media empire and how I would like to congratulate him and Mike Henry for that good almost 15-year long run now they've had doing the Cleveland show. That's been a very accomplished thing.
It's awesome to be the one cartoon show that's so bad that it gets canceled.
It's still got four seasons, though.
I don't know what's crazier, the fact that it got four seasons or it got canceled just because of how fucking bad it was.
And it was. Let me tell you something.
Oh, my God.
It's neck and neck with Brickleberry.
Yeah, no. The Nut Shack looks like high art.
It got as many seasons as Paradise PD.
And they got David Lynch as a recurring character in that show.
Yeah.
Wait, the real David Lynch?
Yeah, the real David Lynch.
What?
Yeah, he's a recurring voice.
Yeah, he plays the bartender.
God damn.
David Lynch has more Cleveland show appearances than he does movies, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, one of the concluding remarks I'd like to say is that maybe for Family Guy, it makes a lot of off-color remarks about celebrities seemingly out of nowhere, the famous jokes about Sarah Jessica Parker or Rosie O'Donnell, but I will point out that they also make fun of Seth Green and Robot Chicken in the Blue Harvest episode to his face.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I deeply respect Robot Chicken for having that consistent stop-motion visual style. I think that's cool. It is so much worse writing-wise, Family Guy. It is a bad fucking show.
Mm-hmm. No, I respect Robot Chicken for being able to survive for as long as it has, in much in the same way I respect one of those plants that kills anyone who eats it for being able to survive as long as it has, where it's like, that's a bad way to get seeds around, but like,
it is the cockroach that survived the nuclear holocaust.
Yeah.
But they are just as nasty, I guess, to Robot Chicken as they are to the celebrities that they make fun of.
Yeah, they're picking fun on, they're making a joke about their friend. It's like,
right. But maybe this is Seth MacFarlane's way of showing you love is to roast you, you know?
I can't imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, no, can't imagine.
Shut the fuck up, Andy. I'll come to your house and slit your pig throat.
Any concluding remarks?
I'm glad that I do not have to watch this show. I'm kind of glad that I did, that I know how I feel about Family Guy, but yeah, no, I'm never going to watch a full season of it again.
You're talking like it's like experimenting with homosexuality or something. It's like, yeah, I'm glad I tried it and I'm glad I know I feel it, but like, yeah, I'm not really doing it again.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make this my whole thing again.
I might consume it through TikTok or something, but I'm not going to,
Yeah. Listen, I had like a phase where I was really into this in college. I don't know if I'm going back.
Yeah, you know, I got a few beers in me, nothing else going on, maybe, but like, I've kind of moved past that phase of my life.
Yeah, that is exactly how I would describe my relation with this show at this point.
Yeah, we actually, in the 2020s, have discovered the optimal way to consume Family Guy content, which is compilations on YouTube and or TikTok. This is how this show is meant to be enjoyed. Don't watch, forget not watching entire seasons. Don't watch entire episodes. You don't need it.
Yeah, you don't need it. It's done. It's over. We're past that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we still do at least watch movies. It's just a slurry. Because movies are a format that you can do a normal like podcast episode about.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, if we're giving ideas for the people who have heard, I'm assuming if they've listened to the stuff you put up on your channel of us, they've heard approximately 4 or 5 episodes of what we did. If you're going to do a podcast about television, do not do whole seasons. It's objectively the single worst way to review media.
I think you can do whole seasons.
No, you can't. Andy, nothing that comes after this is going to be correct.
But you can't do it in like a week, like maybe bi-weekly or monthly episodes. It could work.
No, because then the episode is still bad.
No, because objectively a season is not a good unit of measurement for an episode of a podcast because you do not have the time to focus in on details, but it is also a bad way to express an overarching change in a show.
Yes.
Literally, you are just chronicling from week to week your feelings on a show changing.
Yeah, it's not serialized. It's insane to do it that way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's where I think, like I said, your show is a funny postmodern approach to reviewing Family Guy, where it's
that was not our intention. We were intending it to be postmodern in a smart way, and then it ended up being postmodern in a way that made me break up with my girlfriend. Yeah.
All right. I think that's all we got. Huge thank you to our guests from Those Good Old Fashioned Values for coming on the pod. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Now we won't sue you for posting those episodes.
Yeah, no, we had fully lawyered up for that, but we'll let it slide for now.
Yeah. My girlfriend's a lawyer. I was trying to big law lawyer. I was literally talking to people in her firm. I'm like, we got to put these motherfuckers in the cage.
Yeah. Below the prison.
It's funny. Whenever we've gotten caught for valor stealing, usually people have been really good about it. They've been like, oh, would you like the recording without ads or whatever? No one's actually been mad at us yet.
Oh, we should do ads. That's smart as hell.
I mean, we are maybe big enough that I'm sure you could try.
Wow. We were probably big enough a year ago where we could try.
Yeah, oh yeah, you should start hawking dick pills.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, can we get Brain Force or those supplements that Alec Jones has? That seems
Let's do FanDuel, but FanDuel's little brother got kicked in the head by a horse.
Yeah, mybookie.ag.
Or BetTSI or whatever.
All right, as always, please subscribe, write us a review.
And very important, if you are listening on Spotify, please, please, please leave us a review. Thank you so much if you have done it already. It really is so huge for us. It's if you open up the podcast player page, it's the three dots next to the gear and the bell symbol on the podcast homepage. If you click the three dots, you can then rate the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yes,
yeah, thank do that you, for ben. Us also.
Oh, and subscribe to Those Good Old Fashioned Values too.
Those Good Old Fashioned Values.
In fact, if you have to choose between one of us, do it for us.
Yeah,
we're on. We have a Patreon. We're on most of the major.
Don't listen
apps.
To the episodes that they uploaded on their channel. Listen to the
those
newer.
Ones are really bad.
Listen to the one we did on Walter Hill's The Assignment. That one was really fun. No.
That one was funny.
Yeah.
The whole movie is just Michelle Rodriguez being like, what the fuck? I got fucking tits now? What the merda? It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Right. Do your plug.
Oh, I'm going to say, obviously Twitter, I'm at @Bobo_Circus. Also, I say this all the time on our show, but no one, we only have people who live 2 metric miles from Andy. If any of you guys are in the Philadelphia area, I do on my Instagram, which is Seltzer_Flower. I do a bunch of comedy shows. I run one every Monday at JJ Malin's on Gerrard Street. And I post about when I have other shows I get booked on. So if you fucking like comedy and you live in Philadelphia, follow me there.
Nice. Hell
also,
yeah. Check that out.
If we're doing plugs, twice a week, I stream on my Twitch channel. That is twitch.tv/AnonKaiju. I mostly just hang out with my friends and play retro games, but it's fun. Stop by.
Nice. We'll put that in the show description.
If anyone listening to this has a used alto saxophone, I'm in the market to buy one, so hit me up on Discord and we can work out a price point.
Sweet.
Do you have a Craigslist page for it, Spencer? Do you have a Craigslist request page for it?
I should set that up or something, but alto saxophone, really any condition as long as it plays, I can cut you a good deal.
Hell yeah.
But while we're on the topic, if anyone has a recipe for chicken paprikash, I've been looking to switch up some of my seasoning.
The classified section of the show.
Yeah.
It makes sense that Ty's from Philadelphia given the slurs and hostility to the host of this podcast.
Oh, she actually moved there.
I moved to Philadelphia and I learned them.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah, she's from Buffalo.
I'm not from Buffalo. Nice. I'm from near Buffalo. I'm from Rochester.
That's all we got. That's been a Remember Shuffle. Ciao, ciao. Right, thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
Bye, babies.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. I know all about the FCC. Will clean up all your talking in a manner such as this. They will make you take a tinkle when you wanna take a piss.
And they'll make you call fellatio a trouser-friendly kiss.
Here's the plain situation. There's no negotiation with the fellas at the freaking FCC.
They're as stuffy as the stuffiest of special interest groups.
Make a joke about your bowels and they order in the troops.
Any baby with a brain could tell them everybody poops.
Take a tip, take a lesson. You'll never win by messing with the fellas at the freaking FCC. And if you find...